Moving on, I at last came to a dim sort of light not far from the docks, and heard a forlorn creaking in the air, and looking up, saw a swinging sign over the door with a white painting upon it, faintly representing a tall, straight jet of misty spray, and these words underneath: "The Spouter Inn, Peter Coffin." Coffin? Spouter? Rather ominous in that particular connection, thought I. But it is a common name in Nantucket, they say, and I suppose this Peter here is an immigrant from there. As the light looked so dim, and the place for the time looked quiet enough, and the dilapidated little wooden house itself looked as if it might have been carted here from the ruins of some burnt district, and as the swinging sign had a poverty-stricken sort of creak to it, I thought that here was the very spot for cheap lodgings, and the best of pea coffee. Entering that gable-ended Spouter Inn, you found yourself in a wide, low, straggling entry with old-fashioned wainscots, reminding one of the bulwarks of some condemned old craft. The opposite wall of this entry was hung all over with a heathenish array of monstrous clubs and spears. Some were thickly set with glittering teeth resembling ivory saws. Others were tufted with knots of human hair, and one was sickle-shaped, with a vast handle sweeping round like the segment made in the new-mown grass by a long-arm mower. You shuddered as you gazed, and wondered what monstrous cannibal and savage could ever have gone a death-harvesting with such a hacking, horrifying implement. Mixed with these were rusty old whaling lances and harpoons, all broken and deformed. Crossing this dusky entry, and on through yon low-arched way, cut through what in old times must have been a great central chimney with fireplaces all round, you enter the public room. Upon entering the place, I found a number of young seamen gathered about a table, examining by dim light divers specimens of scrimshander. I sought the landlord, and telling him I desired to be accommodated with a room, received for answer that his house was full, not a bed unoccupied. "But avast," he added, tapping his forehead. "You hain't no objections to sharing a harpooner's blanket, have ye? I suppose you are going a-whaling, so you'd better get used to that sort of thing." I told him that I never liked to sleep two in a bed, that if I should ever do so, it would depend upon who the harpooner might be, and that if he, the landlord, really had no other place for me, and the harpooner was not decidedly objectionable, why, rather than wander further about a strange town on so bitter a night, I would put up with a half of any decent man's blanket. The more I pondered over this harpooner, the more I abominated the thought of sleeping with him. It was fair to presume that, being a harpooner, his linen or woolen, as the case might be, would not be of the tidiest, certainly not of the finest. I began to twitch all over. Besides, it was getting late, and my decent harpooner ought to be home and going bedwards. Suppose now he should tumble in upon me at midnight. How could I tell from what vile hole he had been coming? "Landlord," said I, "what sort of chap is he? Does he always keep such late hours?" It was now hard upon 12 o'clock. The landlord chuckled again with his lean chuckle, and seemed to be mightily tickled at something beyond my comprehension. "No," he answered, "generally he's an early bird, early to bed and early to rise. Yea, he's the bird that catches the worm. But tonight he went out a-peddling, you see, and I don't see what on earth keeps him so late, unless, maybe, he can't sell his head." "Can't sell his head? What sort of bamboozingly story is this you're telling me?" I said, getting into a towering rage. "Do you pretend to say, landlord, that this harpooner is actually engaged this blessed Saturday night, or rather Sunday morning, in peddling his head around this town?" "That's precisely it," said the landlord. "And I told him he couldn't sell it here. The market's overstocked." "With what?" shouted I. "With heads, to be sure. Ain't there too many heads in the world?" "I'll tell you what it is, landlord," said I, quite calmly. "You'd better stop spinning that yarn to me. I'm not green." "Maybe not," taking out a stick and whittling a toothpick. But I rather guess you'll be done brown if that ere harpooner hears you a-slandering his head." "I'll break it for him," said I, now flying into a passion again at this unaccountable farrago of the landlord's. "It's broke already," said he. "Broke," said I. "Broke, do you mean?" "Sartin, and that's the very reason he can't sell it, I guess." "Depend upon it, landlord, that harpooner is a dangerous man." "He pays regular," was the rejoinder. "But come, it's getting dreadful late. You had better be turning flukes."
I considered the matter a moment, and then upstairs we went, and I was ushered into a small room, cold as a clam, and furnished, sure enough, with a prodigious bed, almost big enough indeed for any four harpooners to sleep abreast. Whether that mattress was stuffed with corn cobs or broken crockery, there is no telling, but I rolled about a good deal and could not sleep for a long time. At last I slid off into a light doze, and had pretty nearly made a good offing toward the land of Nod, when I heard a heavy footfall in the passage, and saw a glimmer of light come into the room from under the door. Holding a light in one hand, and that identical New Zealand head in the other, the stranger entered the room.